And I'm here on Wednesday, June 14th, 2023, for my weekly live cast. I'm happy to answer any non-spoiler questions you have about anything, about Stillmire Games, about me, about the world. I'll try my best to answer. And I have some very light Stillmire Games news to share, and I'll discuss some things going on, I don't know, in my life, in the greater, just random topics, as I usually do on these live casts. Good morning, Dominic. Good morning, Carol. Good to see you both. I hope you're doing well. We have beautiful weather this week in St. Louis. I hope wherever you are having beautiful weather. I'm hoping to get some good disc golf in this weekend if this weather holds out. Hopefully it does. Chad is here as well. What do we have going on today? So one fun thing that's on my mind. Good morning, Ian, Susanna, and Ray as well. I had a fun surprise visitor yesterday where there's a professional disc golfer, a guy named Jeremy, goes by Big Germ in the disc golf community. He is a huge Wingspan fan. And I think he found out a few years ago through my Instagram post, perhaps, that I play disc golf and am involved with Wingspan as the publisher. And he reached out to me, and we've become kind of like Instagram friends. And yesterday, or no, 2 nights ago, he messaged me on Instagram at like 9 o'clock at night, and he said, "Hey Jamie, I'm driving through St. Louis tomorrow on the way to a big tournament, big disc golf tournament in Kansas. Could I stop by and play a game of Wingspan?" And I was like, "Let you know, I had a couple of things scheduled that I couldn't move on Tuesday, but I was like, let's make this happen." And so yesterday morning, 8 o'clock in the morning, Big Germ shows up at my house with a beautiful copy of Wingspan. He's really decked it out with 3D printing and custom components, a beautiful game. And so we played most of a game of Wingspan. We didn't quite get to the final round before I had to go and record a YouTube video with some people that I had already scheduled to record that video with. But it was so much fun to play someone with that intersects with a hobby that I've really enjoyed as my kind of outdoor experience hobby, my athletic hobby over the last few years. And someone who is somewhat famous in that realm too, as a professional and as the lead commentator on Jomez Pro. So it was a really special experience to hang out with Big Germ. Megan was here too. Megan, I think, had fun with it. And Megan's brother, Eric, also a disc golfer and a gamer, he was here for the experience as well. So we all had a blast playing Wingspan and just hanging out. We had lunch together, and then Jeremy took off to a tournament. So root for Big Germ this weekend in Emporia, Kansas, where he's competing in a big disc golf tournament. And it was just a wonderful time. Feel free to check out Instagram at Jamie Stigmeyer. You can see a video of us playing Wingspan yesterday morning. Justin says, "I know you guys work on many projects at once." Oh yeah. Has it ever worked out that two were nearing completion at the same time? If it did happen, would you hold one back in order not to release too many things close together? Great question, Justin. Yeah, a few different layers to that. One is, yes, we do like to space out projects, especially big projects. If we have big games, big expansions, we like to space them out at least 3 months apart so that we are not constantly inundating you with new products. So that's part of it. Also, though, we work primarily with one graphic designer. We have started to work with a little bit more with Corel on smaller projects. Corel is awesome, but Christine handles most of our graphic design. So even though sometimes we have games or expansions that are ready at the same time, Christine can only work on one at a time. So it becomes a natural, and I think what is ultimately a good kind of stopgap, that we can only really, really focus on one at a time at that stage of the project, the graphic design layout proofreading stage of the project. Only one game or one big project happens at a time. And so this actually happened fairly recently. We had two projects that were ready at the same time. Christine is working on one of them right now, and when she's done with that one, she'll move on to the other one. So it kind of almost naturally staggers out projects as a result. So that's generally how things work over here. And just, yeah, I guess to come back around, if we ever did, say those two projects entered production and the second one was much faster than the other one and they ended up being ready at the same time, we would still space them out. We wouldn't release them at the same time because a big part of what we're trying to do here at Stillmire Games and what we've done over the last 10 years is shine the spotlight on one specific product at a time, give the designer, give the artist, give everyone who worked on it the attention they deserve before moving on to the next project. And really, never completely moving on. We continue to try to focus on paying attention to building the communities around those projects, sending out review copies for games that were released many years ago, well into the life cycle of that game. Carlos points out that this week many different reviews for Expeditions, advanced copy reviews for Expeditions came out, and they are available on our website, or linked on our website. You can check them out. Carlos says, people really enjoyed it. That's great. Yeah, as you may know, I don't watch or consume reviews of our games, so I can stay unbiased in terms of who I send review copies to. So I very much appreciate reviewers for talking about our games, but I don't consume their opinion-driven content. Carlos says, I have liked the videos that you have produced for the game, but one thing I've missed are the traditional design diaries in which you touch the why behind features of the game and with them a little bit of history about how the game changed. Is that something that you'll still be interested in doing? Yeah, Carlos, actually, I've been thinking about this a lot lately. I want to do some written posts, some written design diary posts about Expeditions. I've been trying to figure out when to start doing them because Expeditions is such a nebulous game using this pre-order system instead of the launch system that we've used over the last few years. So I don't know exactly when to start doing it. Maybe I just need to put it on my calendar and start doing a few of them. I don't think I need to do them one day after another like I've done in the past, but maybe I could do one or two a week over the next few weeks leading up to the release. Let me plan on doing that, Carlos, because I have some things, and especially a lot of photos of prototypes and how the game evolved over time that I want to talk about. So yeah, I'll make a note of that. Expeditions design diaries. Thank you for expressing a desire in that. I kind of got caught up, I think, in the video format for Expeditions, talking about it in that way, but I still love the written format too. Ruse is popping in today. Ruse Games has a game on Kickstarter called Ruse that is wrapping up their Kickstarter campaign today. Congrats on the successful campaign. That's awesome to see. Ian says, this week is a Stonemaier week. Red Rising Collector's Edition got here yesterday. Ian, thank you for waiting patiently for the correct version of your order to arrive. He says, his order of Tuscany and Visit from the Rhine Valley and the Tuscany Special Worker promos are scheduled for Friday. And his friend mailed off one copy of the Rolling Realms promo realms that he didn't own. This is a Stonemaier Games week for you, Ian. That's awesome to hear. Let me see if there's anything I can add to that to make it an extra special week for Stonemaier Games. I don't know. Yeah, really the main Stonemaier Games news was Expeditions. A lot of the work that I've done this week is standard week-to-week stuff, like going through my marketing checklist, doing the videos, doing the blog, but nothing specific to Stonemaier, I don't think. Was there anything? Well, I did have a really interesting discussion that was related to Stonemaier, but also the greater industry, the greater games industry last week. I had this conversation that was recorded and posted on our YouTube channel and on the blog on Monday with Jason Perez from Shelf Stories, with Josh from Chip Theory Games, and with Jen from Keymaster Games. They're known probably best for Too Many Bones and for Parks, respectively. And we had a great conversation about the relationship between publishers, reviewers, content creators, like non-review content creators, and the audiences, the gamers, the consumers. And we had a great discussion about it. And we're actually doing a part two to that discussion. We're recording it this Friday. I don't know exactly when it'll go live, but we'll record it this Friday. That is also with Jason. I will serve a little bit more of a moderator for this one because we have four amazing guests for it. We have Isaac Vega from Rose Gauntlet Games. We have from Hatchet Publishing or Hatchet Press. We have Danny Lowe. We have Anne-Marie from Fireside Games, and we have Helena from Burt Island Games. So it'll be another great discussion to get their perspective. So you can see how publishers interact with and feel about reviewers and how why they seek out review copies. Do they ever try to exert control over what reviewers say? Do they ever pay reviewers for their opinions? All that stuff that I think people are wondering about right now due to some controversies in the industry. So yeah, we'll record that on Friday. Chaz says, I love that Big Germ travels with Wingspan to play on the road. Yeah, Big Germ, like many other people, are ambassadors for our games. Like he takes this game, he shares it with other professional disc golfers, another Jomez Pro crew to share Wingspan with them. I love hearing that about Wingspan and about any of our games. Someone who becomes so passionate about their game that they deck it out, they make it really special, and they share it with others. I love to hear that. DG Walker says, good morning. I listen to many of these live casts on your podcast, and I'm excited to finally be able to make one live. That's awesome. Thank you for joining us live for the first time. Love your transparent and supportive attitude towards the board game hobby. Thank you. Yeah, I absolutely try to support the gaming community with transparency and information, things that I've lessons that I've learned, mistakes that I've made. Part of that was in that video that I just talked about. And another video that I made fairly recently was, and a post, an accompanying post, was about the 10 steps you can take to become a board game publisher, to create a board game publishing company. So I know a lot of people think about self-publishing. That isn't the only method, but that is one method if you are excited about creating your own company, your own board game company. So I did a video about that this past weekend and a blog post about it earlier this week. Sam's talking about Big Germ stopping by to play a game of Wingspan with us. And he says, what an awesome blending of two universes. Glad that you were able to play Wingspan with Big Germ. It was a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun doing that. George says, nice interviews recently. Thank you, George, for saying that. I appreciate that. Ray says, I wanted to let you know that a game recommendation from you turned out to be really good, or turned out really well. I brought just one to play with my family based on some of your videos where you described it, and it went over really well. It was especially special to play with my grandma, who was visiting and suffering from Alzheimer's, but she was still able to understand and participate in the game. That's wonderful to hear. Thank you for sharing that. So thank you for drawing my attention to that game and brought all of us so much joy. I love hearing this. This is like the biggest compliment you can give me, Ray, where I recommend, if I recommend a game and it goes over well with someone, it helps you connect with someone, especially someone who's suffering a little bit with Alzheimer's, not a little bit, but suffering quite a bit from Alzheimer's. So I'm really glad to hear that Just One went over well with your family, Ray. I actually filmed a video yesterday with a few Stonemaier ambassadors about our favorite cooperative games. Just One definitely got some mentions. I won't spoil if it ended up on any of our top three lists. There were three of us in this discussion, but definitely got some mentions, and I do continue to love that game. Sam says, during playtesting for Scythe, did you ever receive feedback that the onboarding process was too overwhelming? How did you handle that feedback if you received it? Yeah, I think at any point, at most points in any game that I'm designing, I get that feedback that's a little overwhelming. And I think for Scythe, I did a couple things. Part of it was figuring out the action structure. How all the actions are right there in front of you. However, it is a lot to look at. And for that reason, that's why I added the quick start guide. I don't remember exactly what point in the feedback that this came, but I know I got that feedback. And I think this is why I heard that it was, the first game of Scythe was a little daunting. And so I added this little quick start, these quick start cards that you can use in Scythe for your first game or for any game that kind of guide you towards through some things that you can think about for your first few turns. It's a different version of the Swift Start guide that we later used in Wingspan, which literally kind of walks you through the turns one by one. Scythe is a little more loosey-goosey where you can decide what you want to do, but the card guides you in that direction. So I don't know if everyone uses that card, but I think it is useful for those who want to use it, who need some guidance for that first game. Carol says that she's seen so many people excited to play Expeditions, definitely seen anticipation building this week. It has been fun to see people finally see opinions other than mine about Expeditions, because I'm the most biased person in the world about Expeditions. Nat is live, a rare live appearance from Nat. Thank you for joining us here as well. A lot of people joining us for the first time live. So feel free to ask me anything. I'm here to answer any of your questions or to talk about any topics. The topics I have today are mostly random things like the Big Germ visit, the Jeremy visit yesterday that I talked about a few minutes ago. Games I played recently are Herbaceous Sprouts, Savernake Forest, The Last Campfire, digital game The Last Campfire, and So Clover. And yeah, I have one other fun thing I'll come back to in a little bit. One tiny fun gaming unrelated thing. Chet says, as I continue to play Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, I notice how much more it has incorporated into the base Zelda Breath of the Wild game. It got me thinking, do you prefer newer versions of a game that get more complicated, like Century Spice Road or A New World, or do you prefer newer versions to get more simple, like Seven Wonders to Seven Wonders Duel? Interesting. Actually, I wouldn't necessarily say that Seven Wonders Duel is simpler than Seven Wonders. I think it adds some layers. I almost might say that it might be slightly more complex. But I think Century Spice Road versus A New World is a good comparison. Slightly more complex game or complicated game in A New World. Do I want newer versions of a game to be more complicated? I think it's an opportunity to add layers to a game. If you keep the same core mechanisms, then someone who is already familiar with those core mechanisms probably wants something else on top of it. If you're making a new version of the game, not an expansion, but a new version of the game. So I guess you're asking me personally. I'm trying to think of an example of a game that really fits this this niche that you've described. Looking over my collection to see if I can think of any game where it came out with a new version of the game that was a little bit more complex. One example, kind of. Okay, so Clank Catacombs, Clank to Clank Catacombs, adds a little bit of complexity through the tiles. Really more variability, but it does add some more complexity in the decision of where how you're going to place that tile. That's one. I like that. So it uses the same core Clank system. I already know that. I'm already familiar with it. Adds this new mechanism. That works well. The other one I was looking at is Castles of Mad King Ludwig, which the collector's edition, the new edition, adds a whole new tile type, the towers. And I think that works fine too, because I was already familiar with how castles worked. So it added a little bit more. I think adding too much more doesn't work, but adding a little bit more, I think, is fine. Also, I am a medium weight gamer. I'm not a heavy gamer, so heavy gamers might prefer that. Lighter gamers might prefer a game to get a little bit lighter. And says, any updates on a timeline for Expeditions? I'm hoping to make my showcase wall and my den for Stonemaier for the release of Expeditions. Well, the retail release is still in September. That hasn't changed. We're in the freight shipping stage right now, and it's an uncertain stage, right? We don't know exactly how long the ships will take to arrive. I think there's some trouble at port in the US right now that might slow things down a little bit. So it's tough for me to exactly estimate it, but I would say we are still on track for mid-July, and that might swing a few weeks earlier or maybe a few weeks later. I don't think it'll go later than that, but I think at best early July for some people, but we have a lot of copies to ship. So Ian, even if I said it's shipping in early July, your copy could easily be the 3rd week of July. I hope not for your sake, but that could easily be the case because our fulfillment centers have so many copies to ship and they can't ship them all instantly. So right now I'm sticking with mid-July right now. Let's stay with that for now. Corlin says, have you ever considered doing a reskin of a current game? Pretty close to the same gameplay, but different world, i.e., like Scythe in a different environment, maybe the Institute, like in Red Rising. Corlin, that's a great question. I have to say, in general, I'm not all that interested in reskins because the game already exists, right? Like, yeah, it's nice to throw on a new theme. Sometimes that can work out. We've seen that work out with deck building games time and time again. We saw it work out with Love Letter. Reskins of Love Letter. They add a little hook to a little change to the mechanism, but usually it's very small. But I don't know. It's not something that I get excited about. I don't get excited about reskinning something that already exists with the smallest of changes. I'd rather take something that exists, like a system in a game that already exists, and use that system, just that one isolated system, in another game. I mean, this was a challenge with Expeditions, right? I wanted to take the feeling of Scythe without just copying the mechanisms from Scythe, because if people want to use those, play with those mechanisms in that world, they can play Scythe. If they want to play with those mechanisms not in that world, that's where the challenge comes in with the skin, reskin, use reskin or not. I'm curious what you think. That's my opinion. But Cortland, anyone watching this, are there any reskinned games where you really, really appreciated the reskin? Or any games where you would love a reskin. Yeah, it's a tough answer because whatever your answer may be, I respect it, I hear it. Is it marketable enough for us to justify a print run of 10,000 copies of a game with that reskin when the game already exists in a different world? That's a tough one. I know, I mean, you mentioned the Institute, you mentioned the Red Rising world. Coincidentally, I know Pierce Brown loves Scythe. Maybe Pierce wouldn't mind seeing a Red Rising game that is very similar to Scythe. And maybe that would be pretty cool. I don't know. Maybe I should consider that in what we do next with Red Rising. Carol says she enjoyed the video with the panel that we recorded about. That was the video that I posted on the blog on Monday about relationships between reviewers, publishers, content creators, and the audiences. Speaking of Red Rising, Justice says, I've been reading Red Rising for the first time because of your game, and now every time a new character is introduced, I rush to my copy to see the illustration. It's very fun. It's a very fun companion to the series. That is fun. In fact, it would be cool, Justin, to see a copy of the Red Rising book or books with the cards inserted, almost like bookmarks, to show where the characters appear for the first time in the books. I wonder if anyone has ever taken a photo of that to show where they all appear. I read on a Kindle, so it wouldn't really work for Kindle. Michael is joining us live for the first time in a while. He only has a few minutes to just, Michael, I might have already missed you. I'm sorry about that if I did. Gerald says, how heavy will my expedition's metal mechs be? I think, Carol, you're still here. You weighed your metal mechs, right? I don't know offhand how much they weigh, but I think Carol weighed them recently and shared how much they weigh. Mark says he's excited to receive the new promo realms for Rolling Realms and the Beyond the Realmiverse solo realm. These are the new realms that we released a few weeks ago, and they should be arriving soon. Either last week, this week, or next week, they should be arriving if you did order them. Chat says, I appreciated the How to Become a Board Game Company video, viewing it from someone who wants to be a game designer. It's good to hear all the huge decisions and risks a company takes onto themselves. It is a big risk. Even if you use Kickstarter, it is a big risk. He says it helped me better understand the reasons behind their choices. Very insightful. Very insightful. I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad that it was a good sneak peek behind the scenes behind the choices that we make. Kevin is joining us from Australia. He says, after seeing the reviews, I placed my order for Expeditions. That's awesome, Kevin. Thank you. And some Rolling Realms promos, the Parks Realmiverse and Expeditions Realms, now eagerly awaiting fulfillment. Kevin, it's possible that Australia might be the first to receive their shipments because it's such a short journey from China over to Australia. So we'll see about that. Carol mentions a great, so the question about like reskins or games adding complexity if there are sequels or follow-ups or spin-offs. And she said that the Azules are a great example. And I think this is a good example, Carol, in two different ways. Because with Azul, my favorite version of Azul is Summer Pavilion, which is slightly more complex than the original Azul. However, I haven't found myself wanting to return to Queen's Garden or the stained glass one because they were, especially Queen's Garden is, I think, considerably more complex than the original Azul. It was too much. It was more than I wanted from Azul. Whereas Summer Pavilion hit that sweet spot of, okay, I get Azul. I'm going to add a little more sense of progression in it, some more bonuses. That hit the sweet spot for me. But that, again, that's just me. Let me know what you think. If any of you have played multiple versions of Azul, what is your favorite version? And did you like that they went a little more complex? Are there any that went less complex? I don't think there are any that went less complex that I'm aware of. Yeah, Kevin said they seem to get more complicated as they go out. Chris has said the same thing about Queen's Garden. Corey from Blue Falcon Board Gaming says, did you see Gabe's new board game design lab GameFound project? I did. Two of their tiers are for a 4-week live online course on game design, and depending on the tier, gives a number of one-on-one meetings. I think that's awesome. Yeah, I didn't see that particular level on it, but I think Gabe is he's great at showcasing his skills in game design. I backed it for the Kindle or the digital version of the book, the ebook version of the new book. I think Find the Fun or Finding the Fun, because that's what I try to do in games. It all comes down to the fun in the end. And yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that project here, Corey. Gabe also had a really cool video yesterday. If you're designing a dungeon crawler and you're looking for different spaces other than just squares or hexes, Gabe had a really, really interesting video on the Board Game Design Lab YouTube channel about different shapes to use other than squares and hexes. It was fascinating to watch. Really, really interesting video. Sam says, thanks for the playtesting insights. Also, the Red Rising interview with Alex is now live. I'd be happy to link to it in the comments with your permission. Absolutely. Yes, Sam, great timing there. And anyone who sees that link for Sam's video, also feel free to check out that Sam has been doing kind of a My Favorite Mechanism series on Stonemaier games, which I'm flattered to see, Sam. I've been adding the links to our website whenever I see those. Thank you for talking about our games. I really appreciate that. Sam is looking at them from a design perspective, not like a review perspective. Josh from Meeple House Games is also here. Josh had a really thoughtful comment, I thought, on the video that I posted on Monday about reviewers and publishers and the audiences and his approach to it. I won't quote it here, but it's in the comments of that video if you want to check it out. Peter says, I just wanted to personally thank you for your support of small game conventions. We send a lot of play and win copies to any conventions that have play and win sections at game conventions. He says, I recently won a copy of Libertalia at a play and win event at a convention I attended over the weekend. Congratulations, Peter. That's awesome. He says, I posted about it on Instagram, which you responded, but I wanted to thank you once again. I was also at the con with play and win copies of the game. Oh, ILO. I don't know. That company, ILO. ILO was also at the convention with play and win copies of the games that they distribute. That's great to hear, Peter. I love play and win systems, and I hope you had fun with it. Hopefully, you got to play some new games there. Tim, who I got to see at Geekway to the West recently, he says he's looking forward to expeditions. We're in Florida this week. Glad to stop in for once. I hope the weather is nice in Florida. Not too hot down there, Tim, and that you have a good time down there. Daniel mentions Ethnos as a game that he wants a reskin of. Daniel, there actually is a reskin, a new version of Ethnos coming out called the, I think it's Archaeus Society. Someone correct me in the comments and maybe spell that correctly if you can. Help me out and help Daniel out. Gigi says, did you happen to keep tabs on the arena sessions for your games on Board Game Arena? Or do I happen to keep tabs on them? He says, I've played in the Tapestry one for the past 3 seasons and it's quite competitive. The same player has won 2 seasons in a row, and a few of us regular players have made a friendly pact to try to dethrone him. I haven't been looking at that DG, but I should. I know you can replay, you can watch someone else's play of a game on Board Game Arena and see how they play it. So I'd be curious to check that out. Yeah, I haven't done that. Kevin says, I really appreciate that you have an Australian web store. And now actually that web store serves Australia, New Zealand, and Asia. So we can ship to those regions faster and hopefully more at lower costs. Kevin says, what was the main reasoning for that decision? Is Australia a relatively big market for you given our relatively small population? Well, part of it is that it's not just Australia, but also New Zealand and now Asia. So it's a decent size area that we want to serve. I'd say the main reason, I mean, there's two different things here. One is we've had a fulfillment center there for quite some time. And the reason we do that is because it's far more cost effective to ship from Australia to people in Australia than to ship from, say, the US. That's a big part of it. The other part, the newer part, is why we have a dedicated web store for that rather than using a single web store. That's a change that we made last year, I believe, maybe the year before, because mostly for inventory reasons, because we had cases where we had people in Australia order from our central web store, even though our stock in Australia was out of stock, our inventory ran out of stock. So by having separate web stores for Canada, for Australia, New Zealand, Asia, for the US, and for Europe, that way we're able to, that way, if you go to your web store, if you go to the web store in Australia and you see a product is in stock, you know for sure that it is actually in stock in that Australia web store. And if it's not in stock, you can sign up for a back in stock notification. That's a signal to us to restock it from the US or from China. Yeah. Let's see. Corlin says Azula has some great reskins. Yeah, Azula. So Azula is another great example of this. Azula has that chocolate reskin version of the game that if I didn't already own Azul, I would absolutely have gotten that. But I already own Azul. So despite how much I was wanted like the chocolate theme, I didn't want to get another copy of Azul because I already have it. Chad says, I think the only time I would appreciate a reskin of a game is when I did not like the theme of the original. Totally relevant. Yeah, absolutely. I can definitely see that. Tim says, looking at other Glenn Drover games since playing Mosaic. Yeah, I got to play Mosaic with Tim at that Geekway to the West. I think that is my favorite Glenn Drover game that I've played. He says, we tried out Raccoon Tycoon. It was fun, but I wonder if Lizard Wizard would be even better with more going on. I have played Lizard Wizard, but I haven't played Raccoon Tycoon, Tim. And I enjoyed Lizard Wizard, but I definitely like Mosaic more. Gerald's talking about re-themes and reskins. He says, I love birds and my copy of Wingspan, but buying a board game themed version of it would be hard to resist. A board game, a bo oh, a version of Wingspan where you're collecting board games instead of birds. I can see that. Adam says, good morning. Wondering about a clarification on number 7 on your submissions and pitches page. Quote, we will not publish games with historical events or people. I 100% understand, respect, and fully support cultural sensitivity, but does this mean you would not be interested in games with ancient Egyptians, Greeks, etc., but not about a historical event per se, just building onto characteristics in a Euro format? For example, you can build a pyramid or a sphinx in the game. It's a good question, Adam. And maybe a couple of years ago, I would have said, yeah, absolutely. That's totally on board for what we might consider. And we still might. I'm open to that. I think it's more likely that we would take that and put a slight fictional twist on it. Because even if you look at building the pyramids, you're talking about slavery there. Or the Sphinx. Yeah, those were not people who were hired to build those structures, which we can address that in the game. We can say, hey, the pyramids were built you on the backs of slavery. This is obviously not something that we condone. It's a dark thing that happened in history, so people can learn from it. But we found with Viticulture World with that with even with that approach, even with the educational aspect of it and encouraging people to learn more about it with the conquistadors, that it was still harmful, that it was still hurtful. We should not have put conquistadors in any way in Viticulture World. We didn't need to. And so I think that's generally the answer. If we don't need to shine, if we don't need to highlight those dark elements of history, then why would we? Why would we? And so I this is absolutely up for debate. I am open to hearing different opinions about this and have my opinions about it change over time. But I really don't want to cause harm to someone, and I don't want to highlight dark elements of history when we don't need to, when there's so many other things fictional that we could use to shine a light on something in the real world, without highlighting something in the real world that doesn't need to be highlighted. And even as I say that, it's a tough situation because I'm not saying that I think those dark elements should be removed from like textbooks, from education. I think it's absolutely important that we educate ourselves. And I think games can provide that platform for education. But I don't know if we haven't done a good job of that, and so I don't know. It's a learning process for me. You can tell that I'm stumbling through this because it's something that is almost easier for us to avoid to avoid approaching it in the wrong way altogether, than try to approach it and end up messing up and approaching it in the wrong way and having it in one of our games and at significant expense. It was incredibly expensive to make the fix that we made to Viticulture World. And that was after doing all due diligence to find any issues that could have been in the game and like historical cultural issues, try to find them. And when we did find them, to act on them, to put additional language and text in the game, to not shine a positive spotlight on them, things like that. Even that was not enough for it. So yeah, I don't know. It's a work in progress. Peter says, okay, back to the reskin question. He says, I recently got a copy of Spectre, a James Bond themed game. It focused on the earlier movies, which I think only true Bond fans would be familiar. I'm currently working on with a friend on making a Cobra, like a G.I. Joe, retheme of a game on Tabletop Simulator. And I've seen some people do that with Wingspan. There's some Pokemon reskins of Wingspan that we did actually. I mean, that was one reskin that we were like, oh, that would be pretty cool. It makes sense for to collect them all, in the Wingspan format. The Pokemon company has never responded to us. They were not interested in that. Trevor says, how is your open world game going? I actually had a little bit of time to work on it this morning, which rarely happens in the morning. He says, I'm super curious how you're going to approach that type of challenge. I'm curious to talk more about it. I'm not going to talk about the mechanisms for a little while until I'm 100% sure that everything that I talk about will actually end up in the game. And then at that point, I can talk about what isn't in the what didn't make it. What changed over time in the design diaries. But it's going well. I'm actively working on it and I'm really excited about it. I'm in the stage right now of kind of solo playtesting it. I'm playtesting it myself before I bring it to a bigger group. And it's such a big game that whenever I make a small change based on my early playtest, it can often take me a week to implement that change throughout the game. Because there's it's a big world. It's a very, very big world. Kevin mentions Tsuro of the Sea was a reskin of Asteroid Chase, a Star Wars version of the game only released in France due to licensing issues. And that's Kevin, that's an interesting one because that's a very popular reskin. One would say more popular than Asteroid Chase, which I've never heard of. Krista says she prefers Century Golem Edition over Spice Road because the components were better, but in general, I wouldn't buy a reskin. And that's two examples of different topics today with Century. Because, yeah, Golem Edition is literally just a reskin of Spice Road with different components. Corlin says, did I get an early copy of Lightbringer? I'm getting the audible and print copy. Corlin, I don't actually know if I'm allowed to say if I got an early copy or not. So I won't answer that question. I think it's a great question. I have an answer for that, but I don't know if I'm supposed to answer it. So I won't say. I can say that I'm very, very excited about Lightbringer, which is the sixth book in the Red Rising series. George says that he is waiting on his promo realms. It always takes a while to get from UK to the EU, but hopefully they arrive soon, George. Carol says she's not big on reskins personally unless they change something, though I love Journeys in Middle Earth and have no desire to play Mansions of Madness because of the theme. So maybe rethemes aren't so bad. And Carol, I would say almost say that's an example where it is just a different theme essentially, but there are new mechanisms in Journeys in Middle Earth and the story itself is completely different. So I think if you add that different narrative element to it, that changes quite a bit, even if the mechanisms are very similar. In my opinion. Kevin says that Summer Pavilion is also his favorite version of Azul. Queen's Garden was just too much. It hurt his brain. It hurt my brain a little bit too. Although I love the hex tiles. They look cool. Mike says his favorite Azul is stained glass. I like Queen's Garden. However, do not see getting it to the table nearly as much as the others due to the complexity. Tim says, would I recommend Terra Nova over Terra Mystica? My wife prefers shorter games, may have more chances to get to the table. I think Terra Nova is a great re-implementation of Terra Mystica. It is shorter, but I see that as an asset at many times because it scratches the same itch as Terra Mystica while accomplishing many of the same things that Terra Mystica does. I like both. I love both. I will gladly play both if I have the time for either one. But Tim, given what you said about your wife preferring shorter games, I would go with Terra Nova. And I would recommend it as well. Trevor says Seven Wonders Architects. Yeah, maybe I misspoke earlier, but Seven Wonders Architect is definitely a lighter version of Seven Wonders. I would say it's a lighter version. He says it's very different, simpler, faster feel than the original Seven Wonders. I don't know if it's simplified because the core mechanism is different. Yeah, I wouldn't call it reskin. I wouldn't necessarily say that it is. I mean, I would say it's slightly simpler and that it's more streamlined, but it is also a different game because it uses a different mechanism than Seven Wonders. Benoit shares my reaction to Queen's Garden, but he says he went back months later with the mindset that that he's more into mid-heavy games, and he says then it really did shine. And this is almost the risk, I think, of continuing a brand of games where you get to a point in that brand where you've gone like much simpler or much heavier, and it is no longer necessarily reflective of that brand. So I wonder a little bit if maybe Queen's Garden was an opportunity for them to start a new brand of games. Rather than going with Azul, they could have started a new lineup of games under a different name. Maybe not, because it does still use the same drafting mechanism, but I don't know. Could have been an opportunity to do that. Valerie says that her family likes the stained glass and chocolatier versions of Azul. I definitely want to play the chocolatier version and eat chocolate while doing so. She says, I've only played Queen's Garden once or twice. I need to play it more to get a better feel of it. Here's Sam did post his link to the video with Alex. This is great. I will add that to our website in a couple different places. Thank you for chatting with Alex about that. Joel and Frederick are popping in to say hi. I'm seeing a lot of people say they prefer the stained glass version of Azul. That was the one that I thought was the most punishing of all the different versions of Azul. Summer Pavilion is kind of the friendliest version, in my opinion. And so I like the friendly nature of Summer Pavilion. Pete is popping in to say hi during a big game design work day. Hey, Pete. I got to see Pete yesterday at the farmer's market, the Tuesday farmer's market. He was helping out his wife at Poptimism. I had a Poptimism popsicle for the first time in a while. It was delicious. Lots of good food at the Tuesday farmer's market. Usually I go on the Saturday Tower Grove Farmer's Market here in St. Louis. I haven't gone to the Tuesday one in a while, but the weather was perfect for it. So many dogs out yesterday, too. Chess says, have I ever rethemed a board game, either an internal game or an outside designer's game? If so, how difficult was that transition? Have I rethemed? I mean, I actually think, Chad, this is a great example. If you were, I should mention this in my game design video. If you were ever thinking about getting into game design, one of the great ways to start is to retheme a game that you love into a theme that you love while tweaking some of the mechanisms, just as an experiment, just as a you know, playing around learning about game design, or design an expansion for a game that you already love. Like, instead of starting from scratch, start with something you already know and build off from there. You can learn a lot from doing that. Have I done it? I definitely did it as a kid. Those were a lot of my early designs. Medieval Quest, my first game design back when I was 7 years old, was a retheme of Monopoly. And I evolved a little bit since then. I did my own for Risk. I did my own version of Scotland Yard, things like that. As an adult, have I done one? I mean, Red Rising is essentially a spiritual sequel to Fantasy Realms. It is a different theme, but it has its own mechanisms. But in many ways, it uses that core mechanism from Fantasy Realms that I like so much. He says, if so, how difficult was that transition? Not that difficult. I mean, you take something that you already know. It's actually a lot easier to do that. And then the challenge then is taking that core mechanism and just finding what you want to tweak and what you want to keep. And that's a fun challenge. But once you already know that core mechanism, I would say it's much easier to spin off from there. I think that's why we see so many deck building games that are use the very similar core mechanisms, because it's easy. It's familiar. I'm not saying it's bad that it's easy. It's nice to do something familiar sometimes and use that same five card mechanism that we saw in Dominion. Frederick says that his favorite Glendrover game is Extraordinaire Adventures Pirates, a great racing game. Ooh, I'm always curious about a great racing game, and I'm not familiar with that one. Ian says, speaking of reskins in a board game collection version of Wingspan, what do you think about the PNP that was created? I watched as the creator Martin Gonzalez was doing this over the months. You know, I didn't dig too deep into the game itself, Ian. Was for the board game collection version of Wingspan. Did he? I'm always curious when people add new mechanisms that fit the theme. Did he do anything like that? Did he add new mechanisms that worked for that specific theme of Wingspan? Tim says, do you have any expansions that you're looking forward to? It looks like Planet Unknown is getting a Supermoon expansion. Lost Ruins of Arnak has another one this fall. I'm excited, definitely excited about Lost Ruins of Arnak. I feel like I still have so much to explore in Planet Unknown that I'm not needing an expansion yet, but it is cool that they're doing that. And Role Player Adventures. I'm really excited about the expansion of Role Player Adventures to add to my copy that just off camera I have on my shelf over here. Pete says, on the topic of reskins and rethemes, I recently played the Jabba's Palace and Lovecraft versions of Love Letter and thought they were really cool and added small thematic twists to a mostly themeless game. You know, Pete, I would love to play those. If you ever have access to those, I would love to play them. I have played the Hobbit version of Love Letter and the original version, and I've heard I kind of want to play all of them. I want to play the Batman version too. They're kind of hard to get, and so if you have access to those, I'd love to play them sometime if you're up for it. Jake says, thanks for sharing your current thought process on historical theming in games. Great question and really interesting thoughts. Thank you for saying that, Jake. I appreciate that. And as always, I want to hear what other people think. I know it's a sticky subject. I think it's one of those cases where I can absolutely hear other opinions about it, but also from the inside of some of our games, be incredibly risk averse from our perspective. So even if maybe we should consider those themes and a different approach to those themes than we did for Viticulture Role, perhaps, that I have to ask myself, like, is it worth the risk of doing this, given how much I know it costs to make those revisions to Viticulture Role? And ideally, we could implement things like that in the future to future games without needing revisions like that. But like I said, like we went through a very detailed process to make sure we had found and eliminated, or not just eliminate, but address things like that, and we didn't succeed in Viticulture World, so it made me very risk averse. Chad mentioned Terraforming Mars, Ares Expedition is kind of a lighter version of an existing game with also different mechanisms. Valerie says that they like Catan Geographies, Germany. Part of the reason I like it is because I lived in Germany for a while. I also like building the landmarks. I do not own regular Catan, but I played it at a friend's house. You know, I haven't played any of the geographic versions of Catan. I did play when Klaus Teuber, I hope I pronounced that correctly. Someone corrected me on that recently. When he passed away a few months ago, we played the core game with Cities and Knights and had a lot of fun kind of honoring the game in that way. And I actually really enjoy Cities and Knights. The game doesn't always shine. Sometimes you can get unlucky in it, but Cities and Knights is really satisfying for me to play. Kenny says there's definitely means for educational games and games intended for fun and strategy. I agree that some of those things that should be left out if they're not necessary, but I also agree that it is something everyone should be educated about. Yeah, I guess it's dependent on what approach you're trying to take with game design. Is it supposed to be educational? Is that the core idea there? And what the theme is? It's definitely really fine line as a publisher, I'm sure. And I do continue, as I'm reading this, I think my main lens for it is, in my opinion, like I read a lot of speculative fiction, fantasy and science fiction. And I think the best fantasy and science fiction, while it is an escape and a departure from the real world, they lead to us asking questions about things that we do in the real world or that have happened in the real world. And so that is like the safe zone that I see for board games as well, that we can use a fictional theme in a game, a fictional world, but also ask questions about the real world through that theme. So that is the approach that I'm inclined to take. Carol says that she is so excited about my open world game. Eventually, I appreciate the eventually on there, Carol. Tim says we've been playing lots of Ark Nova since Geekway, our favorite non-Stellaris game at the moment. Aquatic expansion. Yes, Tim, I'm glad you mentioned that too. I have pre-ordered the aquatic expansion for Ark Nova, and I'm really excited to see that. In fact, I'm intentionally not playing Ark Nova until that comes out, so it can be really fresh when that arrives. Daniel says, is there a sixth book for Red Rising? There is. Yeah, it comes out in about a month, I think in July, late July, the sixth book of Red Rising. And Pierce has also said there will be a seventh book as well. So it will not end this second trilogy. It will be, I think, four books in total. Nat says, for a reskin, I land more in the camp of keeping the original gamer map if possible, but adding in new decks for it if possible. That makes sense. Yeah, adding in new decks, but reskinning it. I think that can depend on the world, how deeply the world is incorporated into the map itself, but it can work. And you can also just reskin the world map, so that's still familiar, but the decks are different. Daniel says, how do I go about finding our artwork? A lot of different ways. I mean, this has evolved over the years. I would say one of the primary ways that I discover artwork now. Okay, two different things here. Like when I have a game in mind, but I don't know what the art will be yet. The first place I go to is an article that I wrote a while ago that is titled 200 plus artists and graphic designers whose work I love. I think it's something to that effect. 200, the number 200 plus is the searchable term there. And I look through this list. I've created this long list of artists who I really admire. There are plenty of artists that aren't on the list that I just haven't thought to put on there. Sorry to those artists. There are many, many talented artists out there. But that is like my running list for when I'm looking for an artist who I want them to do like an anime look to their art. I'll look through that list and search for anime, and I'll look for all the artists that do that style of art, and then I'll go to their websites, and I'll look at what type of art they're working on right now, if they're still even actively working, and I'll pick from there. The other place is that I will also, and many of the artists on that list are not board game artists, which I think is really fun when I can bring someone who's not a board game artist into the board game world. The other source that I go to is Board Game Geek, and I'll just look through games that have art that I love that I think could be a great fit for a particular game. So I look there as well. And I have a post called BIPOC Voices in the Game Industry. There are many artists on that list as well, and so I try to keep in mind Black, Indigenous people of color, people who are underrepresented, and marginalized in the game industry. And so I look at that list as well to see if there's anyone whose art is a good fit for the game that I'm working on. Yeah, so a few different sources there. Tim asks, eventually, will there be a storage solution for all the promo realms? There will be, Tim. I haven't revealed exactly how we're going to approach that solution yet, but there definitely will be, so you can fit all realms in one box. Kim is headed to Hawaii 1 week from today. That's exciting. We're bringing Seven Wonders Duel and Rolling Realms. Awesome. Two great games, in my opinion. I also found a few game shops to check out. Oh, that's always fun to go to a game shop when you're on vacation. I hope you have fun, Kim. That's fun. That's awesome. Yeah. DG says that someone mentioned Raccoon Tycoon, which made me think of the auction mechanism in games. I'm not usually a fan of it, but I really enjoyed Infernus. I love the fact that you can't bid the same number on each item, and there are some items you want to lose for the multiplier benefit. It also leads to some fun fails when you're trying to lose an item but end up winning it because no one else bids on it instead. How do you feel about auctions in games? I have a full video about this if you want to see like my top 10 auctions. I enjoyed Furnace. I would say my comparison to Furnace is Raw. Raw is my favorite auction game. I love Raw. And Raw, similar to Furnace, gives you limited bidding tokens, where you sometimes end up in the situation that you described here, where you might start an auction in the hopes that someone else will use one of their higher value tokens, and then no one does, and you end up winning that auction by accident. Sometimes you might win an auction in a good way that you didn't expect to win. But I really like those limited bidding tokens in games like Furnace and Rye. I really, really love that. Pete says that, quote, rethemes are common in the historical warfare or war game community, where it is common to copy the system's rules from another game, but to use a different historical period or setting. Yeah, I don't have a lot of experience with that genre, Pete, but I'm glad you mentioned that. Pete says that he just signed his first game. Congratulations, Pete. And he's working on two other projects. That's very exciting. Pete is in my gaming group. It's always fun to see gamers explore game design as well. Whether or not they get published, it can be fun to pursue the process even if they don't get published, but it's great to see that Pete has a game that he got signed. Mark says, will we ever see another game like Smitten, one that doesn't fully follow the core tenets of some of our games? In particular, our games usually go up to 5 players. Smitten does not. He says, Smitten was our 10th anniversary game celebration, the thing that we made. So I think for special celebrations and maybe April Fools, you might see things that venture outside of our normal styles of games. So I think it'll be pretty rare, but those are our two ways that we can make it happen currently. So it could happen in the future. Chad says, I saw you backed Thiefdom. Yeah, I backed a couple games the other day. I backed Thiefdom, I backed Kraken Skulls, maybe just those two. He says, do you think that might scratch your heist itch? I'm hoping so. I love the heist game, or heist theme. It's one of my favorite themes. He says, anything in that game other than the theme that interested you? Really? I trust the designer because he did Clans of Caledonia. The art looked great. I love the theme. I didn't dig any deeper into that. I'm kind of going to be surprised by the game. Oh, and I love the price. It was heavily discounted. I would have paid more than that for the game, but it was very heavily discounted on the Kickstarter, so I was in. Are any of you backing anything right now? There are a lot of games that launched on Tuesday this week, so if you've backed anything that you're really excited about, let me know in the comments here. Kim says, we're talking about the different versions of Love Letter. Kim has the Batman version and love it. And I'll throw that on there as well. What is your, if you've played multiple versions of Love Letter, what is your favorite version? I don't have much context because I've only played the original version and the Love Letter version, the Hobbit version, as far as I can remember. And I do really like the Hobbit version. That's the one that I pull out if I play the game. Chad says, I'm considering donating his local copy of Catan to his local game store so others can play it. I don't really plan to play it again, but there is a sentimental aspect to this game. I can definitely relate to that. It was one of the first modern games I played. Ever had to make this difficult decision? Oh yeah, I make it all the time because I try to keep my shelf to a minimum. I try not to have things stacked on top of my shelf. And currently I have things stacked on top of my shelf. So I need to make that decision at some point. Some point soon, I think. So that it'll be definitely a donation to someone or an organization when it comes to it. Corey says he just got his shipping notification for the Stonemaier disc. Corey from Blue Falcon, I have seen some posts from you, Corey, about you playing a little bit more disc golf recently. It's been awesome to see you get into that. He says, I'm right-handed and drive much better with my right, but he putts much better left. That's interesting. Have you found that to be common, or am I just the oddball? I think you are the oddball there, Corey, but I think that's really cool. It's something that I thought about a little bit myself. I am not dexterous with my left hand, but I'm also terrible at putting with my right hand. So I've thought about maybe just trying to train myself to putt well with one motion, repeatable motion with my left hand, and have that just be the thing that I do with my left hand. We'll see. I'll see if that's worth a try. I'm glad that you found success in doing that. Josh also says, definitely oddball. Yeah. Meeple House says, have you seen the news about Ravensburger versus Upper Deck? Any opinions? Yeah, that's a tricky situation. I don't know much about it. I've read a few articles about it. For those who don't know, the core idea here that Upper Deck is saying that they hired someone to design a collectible card game. And that person quit the project. And they are saying that person went over to Ravensburger and offered them that same game that they had worked on under contract for Upper Deck and rethemed it for Disney, for what it will become, Lorcana. And in general, game mechanisms are not proprietary. Like anyone can make a deck building game, right? But if what they're saying is true, if they contracted someone to do a specific job for them, then they own the work project that person created for them. And so that person can't just go and sell that work project to somebody else, as somewhat appears to be the case for Lorcana. I am hoping they work it out because I'm excited to play Lorcana. I was hoping to play it this year. And so I hope they come to terms on it. But it definitely has gotten complicated by this I don't want to say justifiable lawsuit because I don't know if it is justifiable or not. We will find out. But I'm curious to see what comes of it. And we'll see. Jerry says, any tips for learning and playing new games on Board Game Arena? He's concerned that it might be put into a play session with experienced gamers when it's his first time with the game. Great question, Jerry. Well, fortunately, I think Board Game Arena is great at onboarding people because you can often hover over things and see what an icon means, things like that. So I think Board Game Arena is ready to help you there at the very least. I think it probably wouldn't hurt to go on Board Game Arena, go to that game on Board Game Arena, and poke around a little bit if you can. Some games have tutorials, maybe watch a video about it, about how the game works, and then also put yourself in the headspace of not trying to win, but just trying to almost keep up for a little bit in the game, so that you don't hinder the other players. At least that's the approach that I go into a game where I know everyone else, if everyone else knows the game and I'm being taught on the fly, I like to just say, okay, let's just jump into it. I'll just do some stuff. I'll ask you questions as we go. I don't want to hold you back for this experience. My goal here is to learn, not to win, not to compete. So if you go into it with that mindset, I think it can be helpful. Nat says, I recently checked out board games from our library. I love that libraries have board games now. And I thought that was awesome because I didn't know they did that. I thought I would have to go to a board game cafe or something to play for free. Yeah, I love that too. Yeah, we have a whole library program where we work with any library that wants to sign up for the program. And libraries do have budgets for things like games. So the libraries buy games from us at a discount and they feature them on their shelves. So yeah, I think that is really, really cool. And if your library doesn't have that, let them know. Let them know that game publishers are willing to work with them. Stonemaier Games has we have a page on our website called the Library Support Program. Feel free to refer them to that. Jake says, I am not terrible at putting, Jamie. I think it's one of your strengths, especially from long range. That and Sky Anheuser forehand shots. That's very kind of you to say, Jake. Thank you for saying that. Jake, of all people, saying this hit, you want to say 75 feet, Jake? Maybe 100 feet putt approach shot the other day, which is very difficult. Very rare does that happen in our group that someone hits a shot from that range. And it was pretty awesome. I heard it, I didn't see it. I definitely don't have the confidence with putting that I wish I had, especially from like 15 to 25 feet, where I would love to be really, really consistent at this point. Still missing a few. Everyone's gonna miss a few from that range, but I'm not as consistent as I'd like to be. But yeah, I'm working on it. It's one of those things that I work on that I want to continue to get better at. It's the fun thing about disc golf. Lots of things to work on to get better at, and even if you have a bad day, you can have one really good shot. So I played disc golf this past weekend. We were playing doubles. We had 12 people. We had doubles, and I had some really good holes. I had some bad holes. My partner stepped up on the bad holes. The very last hole, I had a pretty weak drive, very weak drive. My partner had a better drive. I had what potentially was going to be an awesome approach. It didn't work out. My partner had a better approach, and Joe is my partner in this round. I had a really good putt through a tight window that just barely missed the basket. And I kind of went into it thinking, we're not going to get this. This is a 40-foot putt. We're not going to get it. That's okay. We're going to end the round on a bogey. And then Joe hit a 40-foot putt through a tight window in the woods. And that was the highlight of the round for me. I forgot everything else that I'd done well or bad or poorly before that. I was just so excited that we as a team did that and that Joe in particular got that putt. That's the fun thing about doubles too, to see your partner have true highlight moments that you feel great for them and you feel great for the team. I love that. Chad says, oh, Jerry, Ray has a good point. I think I couldn't tell if Jerry was talking about playing with friends who are more experienced on Board Game Arena or with random people. And Ray is talking about the random people. He says, I think they'll try to match you with either a newer player or someone who historically isn't very good at the game. There's sometimes there just aren't many people playing. Yeah, so I guess if you're doing a random match, that's good to know about Board Game Arena. Chad says, I found that when I am not too far from the basket, if you plant both feet shoulder length facing the basket and putt using nothing but arm, I get really more accurate. Maybe something you can try that. So plant both feet shoulder length facing the basket. Oh yeah, the I don't know what spread putt, what do you call it? I've tried many different things, Chad. I'll go back to trying that. Yeah, I've kind of switched to a forward stance where I'm just kind of tweak. I'm just using my wrist a little bit, and it's done pretty well. Just sometimes it does odd things I don't expect. Joseph says that he recently backed Castellans of Valeria to add to his Valerian collection. And yeah, we're about out of time, but I if a few more comments comments here. Mark says, I think an interesting content to see in the future is a list of your favorite games themed after real life professions, like floor plan for architects. Oh, that's interesting. Games themed after real life professions. That'd be a tough one to come up with, but that could be fun. I like that. I'll make a note about that. Real life professions. Jake says, let's call it 75 feet. Even a broken clock is right twice a day. It was a long putt. It was awesome to see you hit that. George says, will the EU stores get some of those new disc golf discs soon? Perhaps some of the Green Gully ones too. Yeah, as always, George, you know, sign up for the back and stock notifications. And I think we have some that are on the way. I don't personally handle that. But if there are enough requests to send them in a consolidated package, we will absolutely send them. So keep going on the web store. And if you don't see a product on a non-US web store that you know is here, that you know that we have, it's a product that we have, feel free to message us at contact@stonemaier.com to ask us to add the product listing so that you can start to request back in stock notifications in your region. That's very helpful. Kenny says, have I ever played in tournaments for disc golf? You know, Kenny, I found that for everything in life, I love to be competitive casually, but not in tournament formats. It just, it does something to the competitive side of my brain that I find isn't healthy for me personally. I know people have a lot of fun with tournaments. For me personally, isn't fun. And so I have never competed in a disc golf tournament other than just with my friends. Like we play competitively against one another, but the tournament format, I haven't tried. I don't think that's for me. Same with real life game or tabletop games. All right, I think we're out of time today. Thank you so much for your comments and questions. This was wonderful. I didn't even mention that I had some great food over the weekend at Bull Rush, a great restaurant here in St. Louis, kind of an anniversary celebration for Megan and I. It was our four-year anniversary, dating anniversary. And we also had our cookbook club this past weekend when we all brought a dish from a specific cookbook. I made a Brazilian fish stew with Chilean sea bass. Went over pretty well. The soup was a little more greasy than I hoped, but it was pretty good. And yes, so I had some good food over the weekend. I hope you all have a great Wednesday, a great week. Thank you for joining me for this discussion about disc golf and reskins and rethemes. I really enjoyed it. And I'll see you next Wednesday. Bye.